With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown. Brian Burns to the house.
This one is picked again. Intercepted by Boston.
Bridgewater. Throw into the end zone. Touchdown!
Samuel still on his feet inside the five to the end zone. Touchdown! What a play!
And it is caught for the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. One, two, three.
Keep pounding.
Yes, sir. It's a Friday, and that means one thing, another edition of your favorite podcast, The Roar on Blue Wire. Hey, John Ellis, Billy Marshall's alongside here, having a good time. We've got a great guest joining us today, Nick Carboni, WCNC Charlotte. Nick's all over the Carolina Panthers, right in the middle of this pandemic training camp. We talked to Nick a couple days ago. This conversation happened on Wednesday. He opened it up with his thoughts on the current environment at training camp. What does it feel and look like?
Well, it's kind of like hashtag 2020, the fact that I moved off-season to an apartment about a mile away from both Bank of America Stadium and Spectrum Center and the Knights Stadium, because I'm like, you know, I've got to be closer to all the stadiums. That's where I do a lot of my work. But then it's like we're not allowed into any of them. But I still have the benefit of, you know, being able to take a run or a walk around the practice facility, daily every other day, and have seen it kind of pick up in terms of activity over the last week or so. Trucks of equipment going in and out, more security personnel, a little bit more of the greenway that you're allowed to walk and run on publicly, blocked off so you don't get too close to the bubble. And then on Tuesday, the first day, pretty quiet over there, more stations, you know, so far just been us, you know, taping some stand-ups, but, you know, a couple of the stations obviously went live. And, you know, you're right along the path there that they walk in that I'm sure a lot of people have seen on our videos and the Panthers' social media videos over the years. So you can see who's walking in and out. Matt Rhule, you know, walking in and out with the Panthers face mask, waved a friendly hello to our sports reporter, Ashley Strohline. We saw Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator, going face shield. And Tuesday, we saw a lot of the rookies who had been through the intake and testing process last week that, you know, they got to go through it first, which I think is kind of fascinating, too. The veterans are kind of like, well, how's this work? You know, what was this like? So we saw a crop, small groups of the rookies that are allowed to go in, presumably with strength and conditioning staff, to the fields and do some light conditioning. They're probably in there for about an hour, the group that we saw go in, and that was about it. So you do see some, you know, there's movement, there's activity, but it's not the large group of 90 that we're used to, and it won't be for quite some time. And you know, everybody's got masks on or masks pulled down below their mouths. Like, you know, I guess if they're tested, you know, they feel comfortable, you know, when they go out there to not wear them.
So just to get into kind of the timeline of everything, because I know there's the PA and the league agreed to I believe like the first part is a strength and conditioning, and then it's on field, and then it's work in pads. What is allowed maybe off the field? Because I know there's been some photos trickling in of players working out nearby in Charlotte. I think Teddy Bridgewater with DJ Moore and Samuel and a few others were there. There was some talk about Brady doing the same thing in the league, not allowing it, specifically talking about Tampa. What is allowed in those type of scenarios? Because I know those guys are still kind of going through the process. They just got in yesterday, I believe. So,
yeah, I mean, the whole point of this first week and these 5 days or 4 days, whatever it is, of COVID-19 testing is you don't want to be around each other in that setting until you know everybody's good. So it definitely gives me some trepidation to see photos of these players working out together, you know, just one day in. So just one test into this process. Now, I don't know if they've been tested on their own, and I totally get the mentality of, you know, these athletes who haven't been able to really do anything football wise up until this point, where as they're used to doing it since April, getting together and saying, listen, we got to, you know, get some timing, you know, we get a new quarterback and all that. But the whole point of this week is to make sure everybody's good. And then we enter the atmosphere, a hopefully healthy atmosphere where we can all work out together. The league and the union have tried to kind of dissuade players from doing it. We've seen them, you know, it wasn't just these photos that came out in Charlotte on Tuesday night. You know, but I think that kind of amplified it because they had all just got their first test, probably hadn't gotten the results back yet, and certainly hadn't tested negative twice to be able to do that. So, you know, everybody's got to be vigilant, and I think that's part of it. They're certainly not the only players to do that. Hopefully nothing negative comes of it health-wise, but, you know, I wasn't so sure about the photos I was seeing.
Nick Carboni, NBC Charlotte, our good friend, joins us right here on Blue Wire. Getting away from the COVID a little bit, if we can. I mean, it's hard to escape it.
Yes, please.
That's right. If I could write a book, it'd be Getting Away from the COVID. From a football perspective, I mean, there's so much to be determined with this team in particular. The one team that you could argue needed continuity in those, needed, you know, a good structure the most, would have been Carolina in year one with Matt Rhule. What's your impression of how Rhule and his staff is handling and adapting to all the circumstances around here? And do you think there'll be any additional challenges, you know, based on some non-NFL experience there?
Yeah, I just think that there's no way in my mind that you can go through an offseason like this, not be together until basically August, not put pads on until August 17th, when normally you would have before August 1st, with half a new defense, with a new quarter. I mean, we know the rundown and the list. To me, that's going to come out on the field. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now, what I think Matt Rhule and this staff and this organization right now is equipped with is kind of that mentality of bring it on. Like, let's do what, you know, we're going to set out to do, and not necessarily, you know, you want 16 game season in the NFL. You want to win every week, but not necessarily get bogged down in, well, why didn't we win that game? Like, what do we need to know? Like, stay on the steady course, given a 7-year contract for a reason. We all know Matt Rhule's track record at Baylor and Temple of taking a few years to get things going and then maybe surprising people early. This isn't going to be that year. I mean, I think we've looked back at teams around the league in other years where the offseason was wonky, certainly nothing like this, and been like, well, we should have seen it coming because X, Y, and Z. Well, they didn't have this guy, you know, the quarterback wasn't with them in OTAs. So they were, you know, 1-4 in the month of November. I mean, we've talked about stuff like that before. And now we have this all time, you know, bonkers pandemic preseason that I think there's no way it doesn't come out on the field once the season starts.
Billy, before I let you jump in here, I just want to remind Nick, we talked about this several weeks ago on the draft cast there. In Ron's first camp, I know you weren't here, Nick. You were probably still in high school.
No.
Yeah, you were a young buck then, but I covered that camp. I was there, and it was 2011. That's the lockout year. You had a brand new coach with Rivera, brand new quarterback with Newton, and to see that develop with very little time leading up was pretty spectacular. But this, to your point, it's just an entirely different beast. And you're right, you know, Matt's got Matt's got some time, so he'll definitely take it. Billy, jump in here. What you got, man?
Yeah, and I want to kind of stick to that topic a little, is focusing on how the competition is going to work throughout camp, because there's so many undrafted free agents that they signed, and they have to fill out a roster first and foremost. So I'm curious, like, what's your impression of how those decisions are going to be made? Because, you know, you can only do so much kind of learning about the behavior and the talent of someone through Zoom calls and learning through it, I guess, on the, you know, non-contact practice. But the preseason, I know a lot of, you know, veteran players don't like it, but it does really benefit the undrafted free agents and the guys in the back end of the roster. What's your impression on how those decisions will be made? Because the Panthers do have quite a bit of them on their 90-man roster as it stands.
Yeah, great question. I think that if it says Baylor next to your name on the roster sheet and you're one of those back-end guys, you've got a little bit of a leg up, because we've seen time and time again with Matt Rhule this offseason that he's going to bring in guys that he's got some familiarity with and that have some familiarity with his system and the way he operates and the way Joe Brady operates and Phil Snow operates, specifically Phil Snow, that not necessarily, that doesn't mean they're going to come in and line up with the ones or twos, but they're going to be able to help usher everybody else into this new era. I think those are pretty important pieces as Matt Rhule and this staff make the transition. It's a weird year. It's a just an, you know, awful year to be an undrafted free agent. But I think if you're an undrafted free agent on this team and you have somewhat familiarity with what the changes are going to be, you do have a little bit of an advantage over some others.
Nick Carboni, WCNC Charlotte. You can check him out on Twitter and everywhere else online, the Periscope, all the good stuff they're doing right now, some of the protocols. You know, and again, you got to tread lightly here because you're a credentialed member of the media. You don't want to say anything out of place, but there's been some restrictions put in place, obviously, because of COVID, the way the media can cover. I read the one sheet there from the league. I know you've looked at it. Obviously, I'm not at camp this year, and it's probably a good thing because for what I do, I couldn't give you any value based on those parameters, but What do you think that's going to look like as you dive into camp? You know, no more live tweets and stuff like that. Obviously, I don't know what you could live tweet about because I don't know how much is going to be going on. But has there been any pushback from folks in the media in general about this, or are you guys just kind of rolling with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, I'm just kind of rolling with it because I don't know how much I'll even be at practices anyway as a local TV station, you know, and I don't think anything's set in stone yet. I think there's a chance that we'll rotate days once actual practices begin. So you're talking about mid-August for 3 or 4 weeks. So am I going to get in there once a week to observe and film? Yada, yada, yada. I haven't talked to the people that would affect most would be, you know, The Observer, The Athletic, Riot Report, and so on, who tweet those daily updates that fans love. Who's at practice? Who's not at practice? Why?
Those
aren't things that generally I feed my audience with because A, those other guys are so good at it, and B, it's just a totally different medium with a totally different set of circumstances and when I post things. I will say that, yeah, those restrictions are tough. And you know, I think I've probably learned the hard way every year what I can and can't do. You know,
yes,
and they're NFL wide. They're not specific to the Panthers. They're not specific to the Panthers. You know, I think for us, our biggest question is, okay, like, are we gonna get that one-on-one interview, even if it's just with an Andre Smith, that we would probably get in camp because you can just go, hey, bring Andre over here 10 feet away from the other interviews and I'll talk to him. You know, I think we're going to be able to get those. It's all going to be virtual. And I think the Panthers are still figuring out how they're going to get all these guys in front of who would like to be in front of them in a virtual setting. So it's going to be interesting, you know, and the live tweeting and stuff. And I don't think the Panthers have announced anything like this yet, but I want to say it's the Saints are going to do like live streaming of practices. Okay. So like, can some dude on his couch live tweet what he's seeing on the, you know, so I don't know how that works.
Exactly.
Right. I think every NFL media core.
I couldn't get credentials last year, so I got part-time credentials. I was 1 foot behind the fence getting the same photography I could, and I can't
exactly.
I'm not credentialed. Did that piss them off? I don't know, but, you know, I don't have a credential. It's, you know, look, it's not the Panthers' fault. It's a league-wide memo, as you know, and it's one of those things you just got to adhere to. But I just wanted to get your perspective on that. Nick Carboni joining us, along with Billy Marshall. Billy, what you got, buddy?
Yeah, and I guess a question that I have is kind of the logistics of how this is all going to work, because the NWSL and the MLS, they've had really good success with their bubble. The NWSL just finished, the MLS is in, they're almost done with their season. And now I'm just reading a report from Shams Charani, who covers the NBA, who said no positive tests inside the bubble. So we know that the bubble works for sporting events, but it does not seem feasible to do a bubble for the NFL. How are and we've already seen the Marlins just completely season roll off the rails here. And I don't know what happened. There's been reports that they were partying or something, but regardless, how do you kind of see the logistics of all this being handled once the season does begin and players are traveling to different cities and hotels, and you don't want to restrict them too much, but it's going to be tough to really change human behavior.
Yeah. Probably impossible to do that, right? I mean, you're talking about how many guys are in the NFL? I mean, 1,000 or so, you know, just to try to get everybody to be on the same page. I mean, we can't even get, you know, 6 people in this country to be on the same page with all this stuff. So it's going to be damn near impossible to keep everybody kind of where you want them, doing what you would like them to do for the sake of the season. And it comes down to a lot of self-policing and do, you know, our team's going to be able to tell teammates, hey, you know, like, I saw you were, you know, thinking about going to this party. I feel like I'm like running like a DARE program. I saw you were going to go to this party. I think you should hold back. Yeah, it's tough. And that's what gives me a lot of trepidation, is the fact that there is no bubble environment, as you laid out, that's really not possible. There's no bubble environment. There is travel, there is free will to do what guys would like. And if you have a situation like, you know, you did with the Miami Marlins, it's going to be a whole lot tougher to adjust a 16-game schedule than a 60-game schedule. But all that said, the NFL from, you know, basically day one of all of this has held a hard line that it's going to have a season, it's going to start on time, and they're going to be hell-bent on finishing with a Super Bowl. So it's going to take a lot, in my mind, to knock the NFL off the track with that. And it might present some really crazy scenarios that I can't even come up with in my, you know, dumb TV sports guy brain right now. Right. But, I mean, it's likely to happen. And I don't know if it'll be as bad as the Marlins or not. I mean, the testing in the NFL, and they're sparing no expense, but there's only so much you can do, and there's only so much you can expect from just a group that big.
You can't fix everything, and you're right with the amount of people in the league. You know, I was listening to Charlie Weiss earlier, former, you know, the guy, New England offensive coordinator. You guys both know him. He was talking on the radio, and by the way, when he does his show on the series, poor Charlie sounds like he's got needed a bit. He needs about a pot of coffee to get himself going. He sounds
about
half dead. and he had a scare, so not to make light of it, but he was talking about some of the assistant coaches out there that nobody's, and even some of the head coaches that nobody's talking about that are in their 60s, and you know what, where they might end up. And there's a whole layer of, you know, the officials, there's so many personnel people involved with the behemoth of a league. It's just, you're right, Nick, NBA, it's easier to kind of, you know, keep that bubble environment. You got so many people running around in the highest contact sport there is. I just don't know. Where is the Super Bowl this year, by the way? Where is that?
I was trying to think of that in my head. It's not Atlanta.
It's Tampa.
It's Tampa.
Oh,
okay.
There you go.
Yeah. Nothing to do there. Hey, if they make it that far, go nuts, guys.
Go nuts. Exactly. Nick Carboni joins us, WCNC Charlotte. So, yeah, let's talk about Ron Rivera. The last time you and I talked on my podcast, like the day after he got fired, and of course, he was, you know, ceremoniously ushered out the door. They paid their respects, and, you know, it was a very mutual sort of, it seemed a mutual time, because Ron, you know, not 2 or 3 weeks later, jumped right on this opportunity. And I don't know if he felt like he knew what was coming ahead of him, or if he could anticipate the, you know, the S storm that was brewing. I think Daniel Snyder, you always got to be, you know, buyer beware there. But let's talk about that, because you and I had mentioned what happened in 2017, you know, and how he, you know, for at least from a football standpoint, and then post 2017, between the time that there was no owner and Tepper, really was kind of the guy in charge in the building, very much so. Does that serve him well right now, do you think? Or do you think he's looking at this as an opportunity to do something positive? I know he's been very outspoken. Or do you think at some point he's just like, man, come on, can I get a break?
You know, I hate to say this, but I think he does look at it as an opportunity, and he wouldn't want to miss that opportunity, John and Billy.
Wow, nice.
Now that I've taken the shot, I will say
I didn't even tee that one up for you, buddy. That was just me being a boomer and not knowing what I was saying.
I will say this now that I've taken the shot. I think Ron Rivera is heavily guided in his life by a moral compass and a keen sense in his mind of what is right and what is wrong. So if there's something wrong going on in his world, he's going to try to right that wrong. And he's going to try to guide and lead another organization now through the muck and the mire of, well, two, you know, pretty awful looks public relations wise. Mm-hmm. You know, from every sense I get from reading what Ron has said and reading things written about the situations, you know, in most cases with a new coach, with the name change, like the fact that Ron Rivera was even in that statement as somebody involved with what's going to happen next, I think goes to show you that he wants to be. You know, listen, it's not ideal. I mean, I don't think any coach would, you know, knowingly, I mean, maybe he would knowingly sign up for it, but, you know, certainly not the situation he wants to be in, just like it wasn't in 2017. But, you know, I think he's the right man for that job. We'll see what happens on the football field. But that plays right into Ron Rivera's kind of just the way he lives and leads his life and the way he views the world.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he even took that job, because just look at the reputation of Mike McCarthy. He took a year off and suddenly he's like taking the biggest job in the NFL. So I thought maybe he wanted to kind of be with kind of a better organization and an owner who kind of gives him a little more leeway than Snyder would. But and I want to kind of get back to this point about COVID. I know we're kind of focusing a little bit on it, but what's the situation with the fans like during games? Because there's been a lot of talk that they're going to have reduced capacity and potentially, you know, I guess I don't even know what kind of capacity they're thinking of, but what's kind of the situation right now? I know the Panthers have refunded some season tickets, or I'm not even sure if they've done that. I know other teams have. Where is that headed in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us know right now. I mean, the Panthers can say that, yeah, you know, we plan to have, you know, up to 20,000 people at games. Well, okay, is that starting September 13th, week one? Like, does that happen later? So I think, you know, they've done put their best foot forward, or, you know, have a good faith effort in taking care of fans that aren't going to be able to go to games in 2020. And then telling them that, like, okay, if you want to sign up for this and, like, basically, you know, be told, hey, you can come to this game, but not that game. And hey, you can come to this game, but, you know, with logistically trying to space out 20,000 people, you're almost 100% unlikely to get your normal seat. Some fans don't care about that. Some fans really do care about that. I mean, we found that out when they put those bunker suites in. Like, no, I need to be in this seat, you know, with these people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think if you're going to take that option as a PSL owner this year, you're just going to have to kind of roll with it the way we all are in life and in covering the team and watching the team. So I haven't heard any, you know, pushback in a major way from people being super upset about, well, I, you know, been a season ticket holder all 25 years and this is where I sit and I need to be at every game and sit in this seat. So I feel like they've handled it well. I think the blueprint was kind of already there for them. A lot of other NFL teams made that call before they did. I believe there are some stadiums that won't have any fans at all based on local restrictions this year. So far, the Panthers think that they can put a couple thousand, couple 10,000 people in the stands for some games this year. And you know, Bristol Motor Speedway put 20,000 in a 160,000 seat venue for NASCAR's All-Star Race a couple of weeks ago. Haven't heard anything major coming out of that health-wise. So I think it can and it will be done. I just don't know if it'll be like, okay, 8 home games, 20,000 a pop. That's the way it's going to be. It'll probably vary based on what's going on.
A pair of questions here to wrap up. One from me, one from Billy after this. Marty Herney, we got to get the Marty Herney question to you. Got to do that. We talked to Jordan Rodriguez a couple weeks ago, Billy and I did, on our podcast. She gave us some pretty interesting perspective on the whole front office situation and what could transpire from here forward in terms of the power struggle. And her take on Herney was he very much just wants to get back on the road to be a scout and or do some scouting, as she put it, and just have his hands in the dirt doing that and sort of away from the office environment that he is right now. And Jordan would know more than me, obviously, but, you know, you've covered the team. You know Marty, and you don't want to say anything that disparages him, obviously. But, you know, there's been some questions, valid ones. Billy and I have at the forefront of that about his track record. And, you know, it's, you know, how many years now have we've been looking at him in that general manager chair? So my question to you is not when are they going to fire him? Will they please fire him? I'm not standing for something else. I'm asking you, what do you see Tepper doing with this guy eventually?
I mean, it's just been such a the wild ride of Marty Herney, right?
It's been Carolina. So long, Nick.
He's kind of unbelievable. And, you know, he's great to us. And
yeah.
I take everything Jordan says about the situation to a word because she, you know, she was in so deep with this team while she was here. You know, it flies in the face of everything, you know, David Tepper kind of told us that at that impromptu media session where nothing was supposed to get out, but then everything got out right before he fired Ron. I think it was after the Atlanta game. Yeah. And, you know, and kind of like entering this new chapter and out with the old, in with the new, mediocrity doesn't fly, yada, yada, yada. And then Matt Rhule's introduced, then lo and behold, Marty was like, yeah, I was there. me and Dave helped Mrs. Rhule with the luggage. Like, okay, so he's in this. Like, he is still right there.
I pulled the picture up of all five of them on stage.
Yeah.
Marty looks so guilty up there at the end. He's like, I don't know what I'm doing here, but this is great.
Yeah, but I mean.
Go ahead, man. I saw the picture. I was like, God almighty, yeah. What a family.
It is pretty interesting. But I also think it speaks to, you know, David Tepper. You know, listen, he makes bold moves and he makes, you know, brash decisions, not rash, balls, brash. Nick. Yeah. But he's also not going to come in and just, I don't think he was in the mold of, well, anybody who had anything to do with anything before me has got to get the hell out. So
right.
Marty can help with the transition. He can stay a general manager. He knows how things work. And then eventually when Matt Rhule and company kind of are ready to make that next step, maybe after this year, he moves into another role. What Jordan said completely makes sense to me, that Marty would want to kind of just get into why he loves this business in the first place and go out on the road and talk to football people and look at football people for the rest of his career. I think that'd be a great fit for him if he wants to do that here.
Yeah, and I want to kind of transition a little bit to the business side of things because, as we know, they, you know, they've developed the training facility, or they're working on the training facility in South Carolina, and there's also been talk about the stadium, whether it's a new stadium or renovation. And then they just had the rollout. I know that's a different sport, but they had a rollout recently for the soccer team with their team name, and I think they got pushed back a year because the MLS said you're starting in 2022.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sense of how those two projects, specifically the training facility in South Carolina and any type of stadium updates, where those are and if they've been held back a little by this pandemic?
I don't think the new headquarters in Rock Hill has been held back. I would love to give you an exact date off the top of my head, so let me just go through it. So training camp would have been back in Spartanburg this year, 2020. Yes, it will be back there next year in 2021. And then 2022, so summer of 2022, I think is still the target date for that to be open and fully functional for this franchise to be headquartered in. I haven't heard of any, major delays in that happening. With the stadium, you know, it's funny because I did a story about a month before all this hit, because right before Tepper took over, I reached out to a pretty, well-known stadium architect who did like the new Texas Rangers field, and he did the Minnesota stadium for the Vikings, and just kind of touching base and say, hey, like, I know a couple of years ago before we knew who the owner was, you definitely want to work with them if they didn't want to do new stadium. And he goes, oh yeah, they were here last year. And we showed them some stuff. Okay. What'd you show them? Well, there's a roof module that we showed them, and I can send you the pictures. And I'm like, you probably really shouldn't, but okay. But no, they were cool with it. They were cool with it. So yeah, David Tepper and Tom Glick, I forget the exact timeline. It was about within the last year, about a year ago or so, say, went down to this architect, based out of Dallas, Texas, and they saw some mock-ups, and specifically they were looking at, I think it's like kind of the type of roof that's on the Vikings stadium. And that was kind of like, the new thing, all the rage, like this is the kind of roof you're going to want, let's light in, allows you to have a roofed stadium, which we know is important to Tepper. So it wasn't necessarily a look at, yes, there's going to be a new stadium, but also could be putting a roof on Bank of America Stadium, which these leading stadium architects have told me is entirely possible. So, and the Uptown, and I don't care what happens in 5 years or so when this starts to bubble up, the Uptown location is the best place for that stadium. And anybody who tells you otherwise is bluffing.
They're tourists. They're tourists if they believe that. If you know anything about Charlotte, I grew up there. That's the best right there in Uptown. It's the best place to watch a football game or any sporting event. It's great.
Absolutely. And any economic development people will tell you, yes, it has to be there, and this is what you can do, and blah, blah, blah. So that was right before this all started. But I think we're just far enough away from anything major like that happening. I mean, 4 or 5 years. And who knows with Tepper, I could be wrong, but that, it's not going to affect his timeline on that at all. Maybe it's a tough question to answer. I that was like right before, and the team wasn't going to confirm anything to me, but I know that they were down there, and those are what they looked at. I can share that story with you guys, what the mock-up looked like. But
that's great info. I think
he's going to be bullish on that. Yeah, I think he's going to be bullish on that when we come out of this. I really do. I don't see those two projects being delayed at all. We'll see what the stadium project is going to be, but there's going to be something. I mean, there's no doubt.
No, I was going to say that the little architect tip you gave us, I never knew about that. I mean, I might have just gone the cracks. That's interesting. That's
good. Yeah, it was very interesting. I mean, it's something that David Tepper has been interested in from the jump, and he's, been having meetings with the top architect in the game.
I met him one time, and that was at you and I met at FanFest last year when they gave me a pass, and I was just standing there with Joe Person talking, because Joe and I go back a little bit, and Dave comes walking by me and he's like, how you doing? I
said, yeah, hey, that's good.
John Ellis. I'm a guy out here just doing some photography. No, you'd like a roof right about now, wouldn't you?
Because it was
It's about the roof. He's talking about the roof.
Oh, well, I'll give you a little anecdote. I think it was the first year he did a major donation to local teachers. He's done that a couple of years in a row now. Oh, yeah. So the first year he did it, everybody's outside. and they give the donation, and it's this great moment, and then he does this huddle up with reporters. Now, with David Tepper, we've found out that he's one of those guys that it's like, ask me anything. Like, yeah, we're here. You know, he's not one of these guys that's like, questions about the event only, which yeah. I covered an SEC coach one time, and we waited around a free dental event, and then we're told questions about the event only. You can look at my bio and see and time that out to see who that was. But anyway, he took all the questions. That's when he said, you know, he wanted the Rolling Stones at the place and the Final Four. That was when all that really came out. And then I remember I was walking about 10 feet behind him and his wife, Nicole, as we all kind of shuttled back into the stadium. And he was so proud of himself for telling us that he wanted a roof on the stadium, because he knows that what he says is going to make headlines. And she kind of laughed at it. It was just a really funny moment that he was just like, I told him I wanted a roof. You know, like it's something that he's not shy about. That's for sure.
No. And I maybe, you know, he probably doesn't even regret it now, but I think the second teacher's event is when he wasn't a doctor. Remember that?
That was number two. Every single Tepper availability, you're going to get three or four headlines. I was down at training camp last year covering it by myself, set up for like a Ron Rivera post-practice interview. And then I see a horde of about 40 media members. And I'm like, well, there's only one person that could be. So I took off and ran about 100 yards in Spartanburg's heat with a camera and got a shot. And I used those sound bites for weeks. So I feel blessed to have an owner like that here, because it's always an adventure.
Well, let's see some wins, baby. That's what we're all about here. I know from your perspective, hey, it's good to get candor and it's good to get the quotes. But I know the fan base out there, you know, they're restless. You know, the Cam Newton thing happened, and, you know, it is what it is, man. You can't go back and relive that. We're even moving on with our reporting on that. But I'm fascinated to see this team in action. I hope they play a full season, and I hope everybody stays safe, because honestly, they got some nice pieces there. And I hope they can gel and build that offense, and what Phil Snow can do on defense. It's been so long since we've seen any football, and there's been all this negativity all offseason. It's just time to tee it up, if we can, and see what they've got, because that's the only thing that's going to shut people up.
Totally agree.
Brilliant. Nick Carboni, thank you so much, man. You can find him, Nick Carboni, WCNC, on Twitter. What you got coming up? Anything on the 6 o'clock tonight that we should know about?
Yeah, we'll see what's going on, but we'll have live updates from camp, and hopefully everybody stays healthy. But I know that Friday I'm going to put something together on, you know, Spartanburg and what that community and economy has lost this summer with the Panthers not being there for the first time. I know it's a tough deal down there, and I'm happy to hear that it's coming back for at least one more year, but beyond that, there's some questions. So while things are going up here, certainly don't want to forget what isn't going on down there. So that'll be Friday night at, I think, 5:30.
Nick, man, I appreciate you making time,
buddy. Hey, no problem, guys. Anytime. This is fun. I'm glad you guys are doing this, because, you know, I think that it's a space that is kind of open right now. So glad to see you guys are filling it up, and you've got some good guests.
We appreciate you for taking the risk and going into practice during a pandemic and giving us updates. So
I don't go anywhere near anybody, to be honest. Yeah, but we'll see. Yeah, I expect hazard pay if I go in.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.